So actually, I want to close out by going around the table addressing a question I meant to ask you before, and it actually ties into this issue of age and ageism. I want to start with you, Dr. Stadler, and the question is, in what situations would you consider high-dose IL-2, and do you have an age limit?
I'm not sure I have an age limit per se, but you know, there's some simple tests that I think that we can do when we talk about these ageism things. You know, talking about some of our targeted therapies, our VEGF targeted therapies, I've learned from the geriatricians the word functional status. And functional status is if the patient can get up from the chair and get up on the examining table or has trouble doing that, then we have to be careful about our drugs. I think when we're talking about high-dose IL-2, I'm really sort of thinking about their cardiovascular reserve. And, you know, if a patient is out riding his or her bike and exercising on a regular basis, then I'm comfortable. If they can't do that, I'm uncomfortable.
What's the oldest patient you sent for that high-dose IL-2?
Probably the oldest would be in their mid-60s.
Mid-60s. Dr. McDermott, can you talk about how you screen out patients for high-dose IL-2 and where age fits in?
We don't have a strict age cutoff. People have looked at a functional 70, but there's patients beyond 70 these days who are quite active, quite fit, who certainly can tolerate IL-2. They're screened for cardiovascular function before they get it, so if they can pass a stress test, they can get IL-2. It's actually fairly rare for us to be sent a patient for IL-2 that doesn't eventually get it and get it successfully. Most of the screening happens in the community where people assume that unless people fit a certain appearance, usually like the general thing might be a 40-something-year-old marathon runner is perceived to be an IL-2 candidate. We treat people 60, 70 years old and beyond successfully with IL-2. Getting back to the targeted therapy, we often, in 75-plus-year-old patients, those are the patients we're more likely to start at a lower dose and go up so that they don't give up early. So we have a different approach with those patients.
What's the oldest patient at your center has gotten high-dose IL-2?
76.
It kind of reminds me again of the transplant and story in myeloma. People say, well, it just, you know, it's not about their age, it's their condition. And we go, well, what's the oldest patient you've transplanted? And they'll go 74, so, you know.
Yeah, no, this is a guy who's playing two or three sets of tennis, who's, you know, pretty active. We gave him two courses of IL-2 and he had a partial response. He wanted more, so he actually went to Alabama to get a third course. So there are people who are pretty gung-ho.
So he's IL-2 addicted.
He seems to be.
He went to Alabama for IL-2 or to play golf?
Probably both.
Okay.
Dr. Motzer, what's your approach to high-dose IL-2 in terms of age, and how do you select patients out for that?
Well, I gave high-dose IL-2 back in the 1980s and early 1990s, but I stopped around 1992 because of the toxicity was observed in the patient population. The last patient I gave high-dose IL-2 had a heart attack while she was receiving the treatment. And so in my own hands, it seemed like there was such a few number of patients that benefited and lots of toxicity. So I stopped and focused efforts more on the clinical trials. So normally I have a discussion with the patient that this is an option that results in a benefit in few patients and offer referral to one of the centers that gives large amounts of IL-2.
Dr. Hudson.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's already been said so far. I don't have an absolute criteria for age for high-dose IL-2, but generally I'm looking at 65. I've treated patients, the oldest patient I've treated maybe 70, functional, and chronologically 72, so younger acting 70-year-old, and they have to go through all the normal screening tests. And I'm always wary of the 40-year-old marathon runner, because in my mind, I'm thinking that they're not a good candidate for high-dose IL-2 because they have XP 11.2 translocated RCC or some other thing that I'm trying to prove. So you know, I think there's a bias coming into a referral center from the community oncology practices with it that probably drives it. And then for the targeted agents, the data that we have from the pooled analysis, fairly from our own experience, has been that you can really safely use these. You have to look at comorbidities of the patient and somewhat individualize the therapy you're choosing for them, but you can get them to therapy, even up into their, you know, low 90s.
Dr. Figlin.
Yeah, so I echo my colleagues. Ours is probably mid-70s, but as I was sitting here listening, we exclude people because of age because we think that they're going to have unacceptable toxicity, and we include people because of age that subsequently have bad outcomes from the treatment because this treatment is still not optimal. So when you lose or have a mortal event in a 45-year-old that you've screened appropriately with for high-dose interleukin-2, you do take a step back and wonder, because clearly what we don't want to do is harm people with the treatments that we give. And that's a bit of the vagaries of high-dose IL-2, even when you do all the things that we know how to do.
Dr. Quinn.
It's a biological assessment. The oldest patient I've treated is 71. We get a much less screened population in East Los Angeles than some of the other centers. So half of the people sent in for, in quotes, IL-2 are not suitable, even just in the first consultation. And that's fine. We get to provide a plan and they can go back to their community folks. And the age, for me, is one warning factor for the targeted therapies. I actually am far more concerned when I look at someone who's not Caucasian, and particularly if they're traveling from afar. And just as at Cedars-Sinai, we get many people from Asia, and we know that their side effect profile will be different, much more mucositis with the mTOR inhibitors, for example, and some other side effects, worse hand-foot skin reaction and hypertension with VEGF TKIs.
Trying to think about that for a second. So specifically Asia?
Oh, yeah. And the pattern of side effects varies within Asia. North to south, someone from Indonesia may actually be a Caucasian background from the Dutch that were there up until the 1950s. They could be Malay, they could be Chinese. There are different sort of patterns of toxicity that they get.
So Neil, just as a point that some of us know, because we've gone to Japan before, but that's a country where when sunitinib was launched, they hospitalized people for the first cycle,
right? Wow.
The entire 6 weeks, somewhat for cultural reasons, but then also because they had profound hematologic toxicity. And
right.
So that's a country where 50 is not the starting dose. It's more 25 to 37.5.